Welcome, everybody. Glad you are all here, calling the Orange County Human Relations Commission to order. And we have some new people. Actually, we have some, not old people, but long-serving commissioners who are, we welcome back first, and I'll let everybody introduce themselves. And perhaps say how you were appointed. That might be a good way, or one fact about you. But particularly want to welcome back Becky Esparza, our longtime commissioner who's faced a few health challenges, but never a challenge in standing up for what's right. So we're really glad you're here, Becky.
And
so
I'm glad to be back.
Say a word or two.
Yay! Well, I couldn't have done it without all your prayers. They really helped me, both physically and emotionally. It was great to hear from all of you. Thank you. I'm doing very well. I get to drive now, but just to the store. I can't drive long distances, but by next month, I probably shall be able to do that.
Wonderful.
And I was appointed by the League of Cities.
And how long have you been serving as a commissioner?
I lost track after 30 years.
Yes.
Oh my God. That is a long time.
She is our institutional memory here, so we're really glad you're here. Michael, welcome back to you, too.
Thank you. Michael Reynolds. I was appointed by I was appointed by Michelle Steele. Let's see, one fact about myself. I have twins.
Yeah.
Oh.
17.
I'm married to a twin.
Oh, really? Well, you're welcome to have both.
Wow. That's how you're feeling now. It's because they're teenagers.
No, they're okay. In fact, after this meeting, I'm heading off to Nevada with one of them. She's going to cheer for me while I race cars.
Cool. Don Sedgwick. I was from Laguna Hills. I'm on the city council. Was elected by the fifth supervisorial district's mayors recently. Last Monday, I kayaked to Catalina Island.
Oh,
wow.
Nice.
Oh,
my
gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
That's awesome.
Yeah, great. I always wanted to do it for years, and I finally attempted it and made it.
All right.
Fantastic.
Did you join friends, I hope?
My son went with me. He was alongside with me as well.
Oh, well, that's
made
it more fun. That's
fantastic.
What a wonderful memory to share with your son.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
Thanks. I'm Mike Hamill, and I was recently appointed by the City Selection Committee also for my second term, and I'm glad to be back representing Orange County Chiefs of Police. And Rick, I just can't think of any interesting facts about me at the moment.
That's interesting enough, Chief. Rick Steinberg, I was appointed by Supervisor Spitzer, and an interesting fact, before I was a rabbi, I wanted to be a police officer. I worked for the Foster City Police Department, but not as a police officer, community service officer, so my heart is with the police.
Foster City?
Foster City, it's just south of San Francisco, about 20 minutes south of San Francisco.
It's right next to Foster Farms.
But Rick is one of our chaplains at PD.
I'm still serving the police. That's exactly right. Exactly right.
Hi, my name is Norma Lopez. I'm the executive director for the Human Relations Commission as of last year. So in February, it's going to be a year. That's my fun.
Honeymoon is over.
Yes, honeymoon is over.
Almost.
Almost. Okay.
I'm Valerie Sanchez. I'm chief deputy clerk of the Board of Supervisors. And I've been a county employee for 21 years.
Wonderful. Thank you for your service.
Jamie Ross with the clerk of the board's office as well. I will hit my 20-year mark this year.
Wow.
Oh.
Fantastic.
Well, I'm appointed by Supervisor Sean Nielsen. I love to serve. It's my civil duty, and I'm ordained minister. Three children. That's it.
No, that's just a little bit.
Yeah.
Carrie Reynolds, I was appointed by Supervisor Steele. And I guess the most interesting thing from the last month or so is that I had three family members visit me for an early Christmas, all in wheelchairs. And it was very interesting navigating
the wheelchairs from the airlines to my car, three of them at once, and then trying to get them in and out up to my house, up some stairs and so forth. Anyway, it was very interesting, but it was fun. We had a wonderful time. I'm so glad I did it. They're all very sick in some way or the other. But it was a good family celebration, and I'm so glad I went to the trouble. And on top of that, because it's Christmas time, I was busier in my practice than ever. I get busy at Christmas because people are either depressed that they don't have any relatives, they don't have any family, and they're alone, or they're anxiety ridden because Aunt Mabel and Uncle Harry are coming to the house and they don't think they can stand it.
Can't win either way.
So business was booming over Christmas time while I had a house full of people. But it was all good. It was all good.
Wonderful.
Well, Carrie, you did a much better job than me. My mother was on the East Coast coming back and in a wheelchair at the airport.
She was too.
Yeah, but when I went, she had to use the restroom. When I went to go take her to the restroom, I came back and I had a parking ticket on this car.
Oh, no.
So you handled it much better than my house.
Well, making a ride with you on that kayak was a mistake.
That's true. She's never done it.
So, friends, I like to begin every meeting with reading our mission, and that is to seek out the causes of tension and conflict, discrimination and intolerance based on race, religion, national origin, ethnicity, disability, age, gender, sexual orientation, socioeconomic status, or marital status, and attempt to eliminate those causes. That is our purpose here, and we will speak more about that in terms of the strategic plan discussion coming up, but that will guide us tonight and in the future as well.
Okay, item number 2 is the monthly summary of commission activities.
Janet could not be here tonight, but so Norma, I'd like to ask you to review those activities, if that's okay.
All right.
Page
in packets.
3, I guess.
Item 2. Oops. Yeah. Let's see. I'm just going to highlight. So on December 14th, which was at our last commission meeting, the commission staff were able to attend the Board of Supervisors open house. They opened their offices for the public to come speak to supervisor staff and also supervisors. So we had an opportunity to visit with the new chief of staff for Supervisor Bartlett and her staff, and also meet with Supervisor Spitzer's and Supervisor Doe's staff. Supervisor Nelson wasn't in, and Supervisor Steele wasn't in either. So it was really nice to go in there and kind of say hello. I brought my team with me, so they're able to see who we are, and it was a really nice event. They gave, at least Supervisor Bartlett gave us really cool gifts. Had a bunch of little band-aids. So we're going to hear a little bit more about this in terms of a presentation that we have coming up, or an event that we have been coming up. But Dawn has been working really closely with the California Association of Human Relations organizations, which is CAIRO. And they have expressed their interest in trying to see how they might be able to launch the No Hate campaign, the Hate Free OC campaign statewide. So we'll hear a little bit more about that, and there'll be some planning around that at our next Hate Crime Network meeting, which is next week. But I want to highlight that because he's been on conference calls, and we've been able to connect with some of the other human relations commissions in Southern California to gauge some of the work that they're doing and how we might be able to uplift that.
I mean, to put a fine point on it, it means the work of our staff is being recognized statewide. And when people imitate you or want to copy what you're doing, that's generally a very good sign. So that's compliments to all three of our staff. In addition, this campaign that we endorsed and co-sponsored has had over 1 million hits on social media. So No Hate OC is KNOW Hate OC, as well as Hate Free OC. Both have really reached a tremendous audience. And so, you know, if part of our role is public awareness about the issues we face, we certainly are achieving that here in Orange County.
1 million hits.
Yeah, over 1 million now. I mean,
you didn't have a cat playing the piano on it.
No.
It's pretty compelling. If you haven't seen it, please go to it.
It's still being a very energetic cat. I mean,
exactly. Exactly.
That's great.
Yeah, we're very proud of them.
So the only other two things is the Sheriff's Academy training has been revamped by our staff, and this next week or a couple weeks next week, we're going to start off with trying out our new revamp training for the Sheriff's Academy, where our staff is training up to 60 to 80 recruits at a time. So
might I suggest in the future, at a future meeting either next month or in the months to follow, that Don or you or Joyce, one of you, does a presentation for us on implicit bias as you would present it to the Sheriff's Academy. Might be nice to do a half hour thing to learn about what is being done on our behalf.
All right.
Yeah, I agree.
It would
be nice to say that.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Okay. Next is open forum.
So this is an opportunity for the public to share thoughts or concerns with this public commission. Is there anybody who would like to do so? Yes, sir. Tell us your name.
Happy day. My name's Brian. Last name's Kay. I spoke here before. I was at a meeting after the one that I originally spoke at, and as the meeting was closing, Rusty Kennedy walked up to the panel and said, "Oh, that guy, he's crazy. He literally discredited me and labeled me mentally ill and not worth anyone's time."
Well,
Rusty Kennedy had never met with me or spoken with me. He'd accepted, I think, one phone call, and he hung up on me within a few seconds.
Well, you have the floor now, so feel free to go to your subject.
Well, this seems to be a common theme with the Orange County Sheriff and public defenders in the District Attorney's Office. Anytime I call these offices, they know my number, they block me, and they hang up on me. They're all under the guise that I'm mentally ill. I even went to the trouble of going through the Minnesota Multifaceted Personality Exam. Do you perform this by any chance? Can I, please? I need an updated one. But even after presenting this medical record to everybody, I was still maligned and treated as if I was mentally ill and basically an acceptable target of not just hate speech, but hate treatment. Being denied public services, being denied the ability to work and earn a living and provide for my family. One of the things with the homeless is everybody goes, well, how can the sheriff, you know, provide services and help? Well, I have you can pass this, but this is a text message from one of the sheriffs. I have to go. Hospital rules that you and your people don't want to follow. So this is how your sheriff's department feels about the public. I filed complaints, stood before the Board of Supervisors and said, this is your sheriff, these are your standards. And they silently agree. They say, yes, if our sheriff treats you that way, that's acceptable. The public that works hard and earns a living doesn't find that acceptable. These are text messages from an Anaheim police officer. I'm in light blue and he's in dark. I know a good friend of mine is Gary Maiden, recently passed away at the Garden Grove Police Department. I was trying to talk this officer down. I said, you know him, let's find some common ground and communicate. The officer's answer was, don't twist my verbiage, because Gary's both Polish and Jewish. I said, you know a person can be both? He goes, don't twist my verbiage. They're both niggers. Do you know how difficult it is to report that somebody's called you a nigger? Most people that I try and report it to, like police and internal affairs and sheriffs, they just want to hang up on me. They want to rough me up and threaten me worse. I get some sort of title, like I'm wearing a yellow Star of David. This has been going on for over 5 years, and every time I file a complaint, every time I try and get help, I'm labeled as mentally ill, and I'm met with something that I can only jokingly refer to as well, this is how Anne Frank lived, or this is how the people in North Korea live, or North Vietnam. When they file a complaint and ask for help getting improvement in their lives, which is what people do when they go to the board meetings and the city council meetings, and then they're ignored. And that's why Vincent Valenzuela was killed, even though they have all the evidence, record the officers, train them, tell them mentally ill people are people. And that this hate speech and this hate rhetoric that's going around and being used even today. When Andrew Doe found out the cop called me a nigger and that I was mentally ill, he found it okay to send the cops to my house and my mother's house and threaten us and terrorize us. Just like if we were in some foreign country. And I've been peaceful and I've come to these meetings and I've asked for help because I don't want my mother to live with that fear. I don't want my wife to live with that fear.
So, I just so I understand your allegation, are you saying that Supervisor Doe sent law enforcement to your house specifically for the purpose of harassing you?
Yes, I submitted...
That's what Supervisor Doe wanted them to do.
Yes, I submitted copies of forged plea agreements and my complaints about the hate speech to Andrew Doe's office. And the next thing I know, they're at my mom's house, and my mom's like, why are they here? What's going on? I was swatted. You heard about that gentleman that was killed recently during a swatting? The person who made the call was right here in Los Angeles. And he said, oh, there's a hostage situation, guns and crazy and it's insane people. The police go out, they knock on the door, the guy comes out and they shoot him. The guy had no idea what was going on. He was an innocent person. I had at least five Anaheim police with their rifles and their firearms drawn, escorting me out of my home, saying, what'd you do, what'd you do? I said, Officer Michael Kuna turned off my recorder, or turned off his recorder, broke my knee, threatened to kill me like he was gonna kill Kelly Thomas, and then sent me that text message when I filed a complaint. It basically, internal affairs said, oh, he's crazy. Here, Michael, do what you want. And Michael sent me that text message saying Polish people and Jewish people are niggers. So I apologize for taking
that's
so
okay.
much time.
30 more seconds.
But, you know, as far as Nate Zeglin, he's Jewish, and he's being held in a mental health facility against his will and against his better mental health and physical health under the auspices that he's Judenrat. He's mentally ill. And the Orange County system needs to take an honest, hard look at. You know, I went through the system, through the arrest system, mental health. The deputy said, the reason why we put that in there, the suicide mattress, is so you can crawl in it and kill yourself. Or we can file more charges against you and beat you up more. So there's a huge, huge gap that needs to be corrected. And it needs to be corrected as fast as they fix the airport.
Thank you so much.
Happy day. Please
thank
you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Anybody else like to speak?
Ladies and gentlemen, the cameraman.
Well, I need no introduction. Well, I will say this, I'm a community activist, First Amendment auditor, you know, cop watcher, many things. What I'd like to talk about is that hate incidents can not only be caused by regular individuals, but they can also be caused by people in positions of power. For example, it was April of 2017, and I noticed an Anaheim police officer, he had his Dodge Charger over the line at a crosswalk. And he was just, you know, watching a disabled vehicle, you know, in the middle of a road. I'm assuming he was waiting for the tow truck. You know, I care less if he, you know, wants to sit in his car. I mean, it was hot out, and really, everybody seemed to be getting around the vehicle fine, and he just had to wait for the tow truck to show up. I didn't have a problem with that. What I had a problem with him doing is, while doing that, his vehicle is over the line in the crosswalk. Now, cops use that every day as an excuse to pull people over or give them a ticket. Some people have commented on my video about this incident I'm talking about that, hey, I got a ticket by Santa Ana police for doing the same thing. So I just asked as I was crossing, hey, you're over the line. Could you back up a bit? I was met with laughter, and I said, hey, just because you have a badge doesn't that doesn't mean you can break the law. You have to follow it too. To the response, Officer Horn got out of his car with baton in hand, and he walked up to me, and he didn't put away the baton until he got, you know, fairly close. Now, police officers had to take their batons out to sit down in their vehicles, because otherwise it'll be uncomfortable. That's understandable, but it seemed sort of an intimidation tactic, the way he decided to wait until he got close to put the baton away. Now, you can see the full incident online. I'm not going to describe every event in detail, but basically, Officer Horn went on a tirade about how it's people like me that film police officers that paint them in bad pictures, and I should be, well, the internet should be ashamed of me and everything I do. And he specifically said, it's people like you. So it seems to me that's a hate incident. I don't know exactly what he meant by people like me, what sort of class in his mind I fall under, but that sounded like a hate incident to me. Am I not wrong in saying that? I mean, if I said, you know, to someone of a different race I got into an argument with, you know, it's people like you, you know, that's sort of suggestive. Am I not wrong in saying that? And then basically he continued on with his rant, got back in his car, and when I called somebody to let him know, hey, I just had a cop, you know, yell in my face, and we got into a bit of a heated argument, you know, just in case something happens after this, you know, I could, you know, he might arrest me, do something, you know, if he's losing his cool, who knows what he's going to do next. And he didn't do, you know, he didn't do anything dramatic, but he did get out of his car after that and tell me to, you know, get off the phone, because in his mind, he thought I was calling his supervisor on him, calling the police department on him. And I told him, no, I'm not going to waste your time with your nonsense. But he told me to get a life, and, you know, pretty much, you know, it's a road rage. You know, I don't know whatever to call it than a road rage, because he got upset that I told him to back up.
One more minute,
so, I'm going to wrap it up right now. Okay. But I just wanted to say, you know, it's not only ordinary people can have hate incidents, if you will. It's people in all positions, whether it be, you know, a guy working at a food cart or the mayor of a big, you know, metropolis city. You know, anybody can have a hate incident. So I just want to keep that in mind, that that's not, you know, an impossible thing. It's not, you know, just people that, you know, are, you know, average working Joe. It can be, you know, your mayors, it can be, you know, police officers, it could be your doctor, it could be your neighbor. Anybody can have a hate incident. So I just want this board to keep that in mind.
Thank you so much for your comments. Any other comments from the public? Excellent.
Do you like their names when they speak? Do we record it?
I think it's optional if it's not. Isn't it optional?
Is it optional?
Usually general public comments, which I think this is considered, we will list the names.
Can you tell us your name, sir?
I'm the cameraman.
The cameraman. Thank you.
Is the first name and cameraman is the last name?
No, the is the first name, cameraman is the middle name, and
last name being withheld
the man
on purpose. Okay.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I'd like to
one of those people that will go by the middle and last name.
Perfect. Thank you. I'd like to move to item number 6 if we can, and then we can come back to the others. Is that all right?
Sure.
Since we have a guest speaker here, I want to be respectful of her time.
Sure. Item number 6 is hate crime trends and impacts in the U.S.
Great. I'd like to introduce to you Brett Steele. Brett comes to us with a very impressive resume. And her title recently changed, and I didn't bring the new title, so you'll have to tell me. But she works with the Department of Homeland Security on the West Coast region, and essentially is our liaison in many ways to our community here and to other faith-based communities and nonprofits and all sorts of other organizations and communities in the West Coast. And she has worked for the Justice Department for many years at the very highest levels, I might tell you. The best part of this story for this commission is Brett is an Orange County resident now, and was as she was growing up, and grew up through the Bridges program here at Orange County Human Relations. And so it's a product of our own work, and furthermore, is one of the foremost experts on hate crime today in America. And I thought, since that is a central subject of our commission, that we welcome you home. We're glad to have you here, and really curious to learn from you for the next 20 plus minutes. So, yes, ma'am.
If I might add.
Please do.
She was our first youth on the council.
Wow.
Representative. I had the pleasure of serving with her. Yeah.
Wonderful. It's wonderful. Come closer. Let's pull up a chair for you.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, welcome, Brett. We're really glad you're here. Tell us your official title, because I know it changed.
Yes. So my official title is I am the Regional Director of Strategic Engagement for the Department of Homeland Security, Office of Partner Engagement. And 23 years ago, I participated in an event that changed my life. I'm hoping all of you have heard of it. It's called Walk in My Shoes. So I jumped at the chance to participate in the very first human relations leadership camp, summer camp. I loved every minute of the very first year of the Human Relations Associates program, which is now the Ambassadors program. As Becky mentioned, I was one of the first student board members transitioned from the youth leadership programs that Orange County Human Relations has to the dispute resolution and community development programs as I went to college and in fact majored in ethnic studies at Berkeley because of OC Human Relations and went to law school because of the dispute resolution program at OC Human Relations. So this organization truly shaped who I am and it is a pleasure for me to come back here in my new role as regional director. So Rabbi Steinberg asked me to speak about hate crimes trends nationally and also the local flavor, kind of how they're situated in Orange County as well. My office, specifically at the national level, we focus not just on hate crimes but also domestic terrorism, so you're going to see kind of both interwoven together. In 2016, the OC Human Relations Hate Crimes Report reported a marked increase in both hate crimes and hate incidents over 2015. What we're seeing from local law enforcement, and Chief Hamill, you can agree or disagree, is we're expecting a marked increase in 2017 as well. So ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, tracks anti-Semitic activity. And nationally, they saw in the first three quarters, so the first 9 months of 2017, a 67% increase in anti-Semitic activity over the first three quarters of 2016. In California, that's slightly better, 46% increase, but still substantial. In the 6 weeks after Charlottesville, anti-Semitic activity was up 182%. Over the 6 weeks before Charlottesville.
Nationwide or
nationwide?
Okay.
So that gives you a sense of how significant events can truly change the national climate as well as the local climate. Orange County has seen an increase in hate incidents, including tagging, targeting both Muslim and Jewish residents within the county. Poster and sticker campaigns, banner drops like Identity Europa, Secure Borders, Secure Futures, and other things along these lines. And while a lot of this activity is constitutionally protected speech, Orange County has also developed a national reputation based on some media articles for exporting hate-based violence in protests throughout the state as well as throughout the country. ProPublica reported that many of the individuals participating in violence in the Charlottesville incident actually hailed from Orange County. So it's good to know where you're situated within this broader conversation.
These local dynamics make campaigns like Hate Free OC and the No Hate campaign that was just mentioned more important than ever, both in raising awareness but also in creating that respectful, inclusive community that this commission seeks to create. So some broader national trends. FBI recognizes 8 domestic extremist movements throughout the country: militia, sovereign citizen, anarchist, white supremacist, animal rights and eco, abortion, black separatist, and Puerto Rican extremists. Which do you think are the most prominent within this county? Militia, sovereign citizen, anarchist, which includes both anti-fascist and anti-anti-fascist, white supremacists, animal rights and eco, abortion, both sides of the abortion debate, black separatists, and Puerto Rican extremists.
Sovereign citizen.
Well, I don't know. Rick and I serve on several militias. What would you say?
I say white supremacists, but I'll go with what the chief said.
Both are right. Both are right. Within the county, militia, sovereign, anarchist, and white supremacists.
I'm not sure. What is the... How, I mean, I understand what all those are except the sovereign one. What is that?
Yes, so sovereign citizens do not recognize the authority of the United States government.
Oh, okay. So they're like the ones in Texas who keep filing liens on everybody's property and refuse to pay any taxes.
Yes.
Okay.
So sovereign citizens often are involved in your nuisance liens, your tax evasion schemes, but they can turn violent, particularly against law enforcement. And so while it tends to be more of court filing and tax evasion activity, there is the potential for violence. And you're absolutely right, as I would expect within the county, white supremacists, militia, and anarchists as well.
How do you tabulate a hate crime? I mean, how do you recognize it? How do you officially say this was a hate crime? What are the parameters of the behavior?
So the hate crime reporting largely comes from local law enforcement. Obviously, Orange County Human Relations has its own hate crime report.
Right.
And one of the things that the Orange County Fusion Center said is, hey, would you ask them if they would talk to us, because we'd love to know how they do their hate crime reporting, because they find your report extremely helpful in understanding the trends from the county, because you're getting some different information than what they're getting from local law enforcement. But the hate crime reporting that comes into the FBI is reported through local law enforcement.
Okay.
And it's meeting the statutory definition of hate crime. Okay. So not hate incidents, which are also tracked by Orange County Human Relations, but the statutory definition is for hate crime.
So in other words, we're talking about activity that is not protected by the First Amendment.
Yes, activity that is criminal in nature.
Okay.
Hate incidents can be protected by the First Amendment. And
like calling somebody an epithet. Yeah, they may have a First Amendment right to say things that are rude and unpleasant.
Yes. So the majority of fatalities in the last 16 years in the United States came from white supremacists.
Smoking was the major culprit.
Of the 8 domestic extremist movements that I mentioned, Booker, the second most lethal is a category we call other. And we're seeing this increasingly with some convergence of the different movements where, and especially with online radicalization, you'll see people who may subscribe to multiple ideologies and kind of have their own idiosyncratic combination. Dylan Roof is an example. Doesn't necessarily neatly fall into just one category.
It seems like some of the militia folks could be supremacists.
Or sovereigns,
or,
yes.
Or sovereigns.
You're seeing
so
increasing
what, how
overlap
do you define militia?
So militia frequently are 3 percenters
your individuals who are seeking overthrow by force or violence.
Through, militaristic means, right?
So, by force or violence, yes. So,
Local police, sheriff.
Local police are acting under authority and not seeking overthrow of the government. So that other category is increasingly common, and again, it's because we're starting to see some convergence of groups that are starting to organize, not necessarily organize, but be more aware of and more overlap with one another. And the next being the sovereign citizens that you mentioned, in terms of lethality.
Right, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
And I don't want you to reveal anything top secret, but my assumption is that the federal government has infiltrated many of these groups to get the information of what's going on in these groups. I hope that's the case. But whether you can confirm that or not, I'll let you decide. Is there any changing their minds? Is there any growth? Is there any room for convincing somebody that their way is not productive or constructive?
So an amazing amount of information on these organizations is shared by them in open source media.
Mm. So it's not too hard. You don't need to infiltrate almost.
That it is amazing what you can find on Facebook, on Twitter, on YouTube, and in other means. when it comes to changing their mind, I was actually just meeting with an organization today called Life After Hate. An organization of former white supremacists, all of whom have left the movement, or movements, as the case may be. They come from many different parts of the white supremacist movement, and have committed themselves and committed their life's work to helping other people leave the movement. And a year ago, they were getting roughly, I'm going to get these numbers slightly off because it's been a while since I heard this statistic, but I want to say it was roughly 7 calls a month. Now they're getting 7 calls a day.
Wow.
Absolutely. People looking to leave the movement. And they called me earlier this week and said, we want to build an intervention program within Southern California, help us figure out where to do it.
And if you don't know, I mean, please say so, but what would be the largest factor, the most significant factor in changing people's minds to get out of these hate groups?
It can be a lot of different things. And
is it
here
kindness from
here
a stranger of a group they were supposed to be hating?
Here I'm
going to
start speaking anecdotally. we've got some empirical studies running on this, but we don't have definitive results yet. And even the empirical studies that we're running, because we're talking about such a low end, such a low number of people, and we don't necessarily have statistically significant results.
Mm-hmm.
But in many of the individuals that I've spoken with, it is that experience. You know, Christian Picciolini is a prominent former white supremacist, and he talks about really two events in his life that caused him to change the course of his life. The first was having his first child, and having that sense of compassion reawakened in him that he had shut off for so long. And the second was he had a business. He was selling music. Now, he created his store to sell white power music, but the only way he could stay in business was to sell more than white power music.
That's good to know.
Yeah, it is slightly helpful, right? But it was in interacting with customers that he had never interacted with before and would otherwise have regarded as the enemy, and experiencing empathy from them, that he started to find cracks in his worldview. Now, this takes time. But as I mentioned with Life After Hate, they've seen a dramatic increase in calls of people voluntarily wanting to leave the movement. Now, the question of whether more people are recruited than the people exiting is still a valid question. But yes, people can leave. And we were talking about it with one of the founders of Life After Hate this morning, and in his experience with the people that he's talked to, in many cases, it is that experience of having a first child. Now,
who would think encouraging haters to reproduce could be productive?
Well, and we were talking about it this morning because there's also an element where, you know, that reproduction can be considered continuing the ideology, right? It's furthering the white race. And so there's, that may be the original goal, but there is that moment of connection and compassion that seems to break through to some individuals. But again, that's anecdotal.
Don, you wanted to add something?
Thanks for that, Brad. I want to piggyback on your comment. In there's an old film called Journey to Hate Millennium. I think it was produced in 1999. It's old. There was one sector. This film covered the Matthew Shepard, James Byrd, who was dragged in Texas, you know, and he decapitated, and talk about different hate group and how can we move to the new millennium and creating a hate-free society, right? But there was a former white supremacist person who is now, or I don't know now, he's still working for the Museum of Tolerance, and he left the group, have talked about how his own son had influenced him to look himself in the mirror and say, I don't want him to grow up to be like me, right? Over the time when I have done some presentation, I remember a young woman came and approached him and shared her story with me, talking about her twin brother, who she said, we grew up together, we're twin, and somehow the end of our junior high school, he had started hanging out with the wrong group. Submerged himself into the white supremacist neo-Nazi group. It took her so long to try to convince him, but I think with the exposing him to different culture and different people, to interact with other people who are different, with different ideology, and keep reintroducing the inclusiveness and diversity to him, actually converted him back into being who he she know that he was a loving person and things like that. And I think that what Brett have shared is a very common, I think to me, cause of people who in a way have, you know, we exited themselves from that type of society in the community.
Thank you. Thanks, Tom.
So that's absolutely right. And there are, because there is a lot of activity in Orange County, there are also a lot of formers in Orange County. Many of whom have come forward and said, we want to be part of the solution. And so there are opportunities for partnership there.
Good question.
Yes.
Is that, are there pockets of concentration, or is it just spread pretty evenly throughout the county?
There are pockets of concentration.
Okay, so they kind of do unite
So one of the things, I grew up in Irvine, and one of the first times I was sitting down with a former white supremacist from Orange County, I asked him, I said, okay, help me understand the dynamics in Orange County, because I grew up in Irvine and I really wasn't aware of it. You know, I did lots of workshops in schools for the Bridges program and saw plenty of white privilege and inability to recognize white privilege, but I didn't necessarily see the overt white supremacy in Irvine. And he said, yeah, we couldn't come to Irvine. Irvine PD had it pretty well controlled. And it was just one of those moments where I was like, huh, okay. There are parts of the county, especially South County, that have more of a concentration. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily want to name names. But yes, it is not evenly distributed.
Can I ask a follow-up to that?
Yes.
You didn't know you would be at a hearing, so apologize. But you know, there's a debate all over the country. Really, is when there's a hate crime incident, sometimes it's better not to say a word, because if we draw attention to it, then that only expands it. Mm-hmm. And then there's the other point that you ought to put a spotlight on every hate incident and bigot and racist, so that they're exposed for who they are. Wondering if you have a thought about that and where you would come down on that.
Yeah, I mean, this was, as the rabbi mentioned previously, in my last role, I served in the Deputy Attorney General's Office at the Department of Justice. I worked directly under Jim Cole, Sally Yates, and Rod Rosenstein. And it frequently came up, especially when it came to the disproportionate reporting of terrorist incidents that were internationally inspired as opposed to those that were domestically inspired. And we had many prominent imams saying, why can't you advertise domestic terrorism in the same way that you advertise international terrorism? And one of the things that the domestic terrorism operations section of the FBI told me when I came to them with this question was, we don't, you know, if anything, we want to reduce all publicity of terrorism of all forms. We don't want to correct one problem by creating a new problem of truly giving that individual that infamy that they seek, that 15 minutes of fame that they seek. The concern being copycats. Now, that's one side of the conversation. The other side of the conversation is, if we don't shine a light on it and raise awareness about it, how do we expect to fix it? How do we expect to address it? And I don't know empirically which side of that equation has more weight. I honestly don't know the answer. I can tell you that's how the argument goes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a conversation my colleagues in Australia have been talking to their media saying, okay, we need more responsible reporting because you're making this worse. When you have the, you know, week of news coverage anytime there's an incident, ultimately you're inspiring more people.
To do good?
Probably both. Probably both.
Yes, that, there's truth to that. There's absolutely truth to that.
Strength in numbers.
But, so, I don't have an answer for you on that. I would love to see more data on where that plays, and I think, honestly, you need a nuanced response regardless. I mentioned the most lethal attacks, white supremacists, this other category, and sovereign citizens. The other thing in terms of lethality that we've seen is, generally, it's your lone offenders. It's your individuals. Not necessarily the group dynamic that we saw historically. They may be part of a group online. They may be part, you know, following a broader conversation, but they're generally plotting and committing an attack alone. In 2015, the lethal acts were all by lone offenders, specifically Dylan Roof, Robert Deere, who attacked the Planned Parenthood in Colorado. So we're seeing more and more of that over time. White supremacists have seen exponential growth online. So ISIS gets a lot of media attention for just how slick and pervasive their recruiting has become. But white supremacists have been closing the gap, and in fact, exceed ISIS on most common metrics. They have more followers, more tweets per day. In fact, they've seen a 600% increase in their followers since 2012, which is especially significant when you realize that 2012 was significantly higher than 2007. We saw an increase with the election of the first Biden that was sustained over time. I've got some information on social media practices. The basic theme here is we've done a lot of work with social media companies to try and encourage them to be more active in managing the hate that's on their platforms. But every step that they take is met with a countermeasure. So when they're using algorithms to try and identify hate speech, the group switched to code words. When they're looking at open source information to understand how the hate flows on their platform, they switch to secret accounts, they switch to secret groups. When platforms are shut down to white supremacists and other domestic terrorist organizations, they create their own alternatives. There's Patreon rather than Patreon. There's GoFundMe rather than GoFundMe. There, you know, literally for every account that's been shut, there's an alternative. And they're also looking to, yes?
About social media, just a question. It might go reference back to your previous job at DOJ. I know one of the things that local law enforcement has struggled with in the past few years is recognizing, as you say, that there's great value in sometimes thwarting crimes or gathering intelligence from open source social media. There continue to be many different platforms, software platforms, that are intended to mine open source social media. And those have been helpful to law enforcement in preventing crime many times. But many of these companies now are changing the algorithms of their software and limiting the ease at which law enforcement can actually mine information.
Right.
I'm just curious your opinion, your perspective, your experience in that area.
Well, it's not just that. You also, the more effective Twitter becomes at managing hate on their platform or Facebook or any of the other big four, as they're called, the more these organizations switch to more encrypted platforms. Switch to Signal, switch to Telegram, would switch to AskFM and other more encrypted media. I've learned far too many apps that I will never use in this role. And it's difficult, I think, and this goes back to the whole debate over the cell phone in San Bernardino as well. This going dark problem where you don't have access to information, it is a thorny issue. And ultimately, I think it's an issue. On that, I rely on where there is lawful court process, I feel like there should be compliance with that lawful court process.
Yes.
When it comes to mining and scraping, part of me says that's the company's prerogative to do. But then the question becomes, can you have an informed discussion with the company to try and influence their policy?
There's recently an article I just saw, I think yesterday, that FBI reported over 7,000 electronic devices they seized to serve for search warrants, but they cannot access.
So, no, it's a challenge. If you ever hear the term going dark, this is part of what we're talking about. It's moving to encrypted mediums where there's no longer visibility. And so, again, these companies, and I've worked with them for years now, are truly taking steps to be more proactive and to try and manage hate on their platforms. But for every step they take, there is a countermeasure. And so it is a constant process. So, final part, I promise. Regardless of what type of domestic extremist movement you're looking at, regardless of what type of group is inspiring the hate crime or the domestic terrorism, there are commonalities. The first is they're looking for vulnerabilities. Most commonly, they're looking for individuals who are isolated, alienated, and often bullied. The second, they're focusing on grievances. They're exploiting those grievances. That sense of discrimination, that sense of alienation. Next, they're providing that community of interest, that sense of belonging. This is particularly important for youth. We're searching for that sense of belonging. Fourth, they're promoting a polarizing narrative. It's us versus them, it's black versus white. And they insist that violence is the only solution to whatever problem they're posing. Once we understand what these commonalities are, we have a sense of how to address them. And a lot of the ways we address them, OC Human Relations is already doing. So, if we know that they are looking for vulnerabilities, what can we do to proactively address those vulnerabilities? This includes things like the Parent Leadership Institute that OC Human Relations started, mentoring programs, anti-bullying campaigns, hate-free OC campaigns. If we know that they're looking to exploit grievances, what can we do to address those grievances? This is OC Human Relations bread and butter. Your community building work that you do, the police community relations work that OC Human Relations does. If we know that they're providing a community of interest, we can provide our own community of interest, our own sense of belonging, a positive sense of belonging. This is what Bridges does. And again, the community building work as well. And if we know that they're promoting a black-white narrative and saying violence is the only solution, we need to promote civic engagement as an alternative to violence. Through Bridges, through ATRAP, through internships. And when we see that call for violence, posing that alternative narrative, providing alternatives to violence. And I will close there.
Thank you so much. Your wisdom is really helpful. And I might humbly request that we might call on you again now that you're a resident of this county once again and an alumna of OC Human Relations. So
I was so happy. It only took me 4 miles to drive here.
That are 4,000. Thank you so very much. We really appreciate your words tonight.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay.
Okay,
go back to
item number 3, approved 2018 commission meeting calendar.
Okay, last month at our meeting we did not have a quorum, and so we were not able to approve the calendar as presented. And without going into the lengthy conversation that we went through last time, essentially we have been asked to meet during the day. At the Hall of Administration during working hours, and despite promises and conversations had, we've been asked to do this and see how it goes as the bylaws dictate. And do we have an update of what days are available, or we're still on the second and third Thursday? Those have been reserved for us?
Yes.
Okay. So, I'd like to open it up for discussion here as we consider the possibility of meeting during the day, either in the morning or the afternoon, second and third Thursday of each month, morning and afternoon respectively, have been reserved as of right now for us, and to hear what people have to say.
What time in the morning and what time in the afternoon?
That's the commission's decision.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess I'm throwing that out there to our commission.
Is the second and third Wednesday in the morning out of the question as an option? Have more people voiced interest in Thursday than in Wednesday? No.
Not necessarily.
Okay. You've just selected those to hold.
We.
Okay.
Selected them to hold because they were on the same day of the week.
I see.
That we meet now, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, my, if you're asking me,
I'd rather meet as early as possible or as late as possible.
That's me too. I was going to say the same thing. So how many, is it 2 hours? I mean, would we say like 9 to 11 or 3 to 5? Is that kind of how?
I think so.
Is that how it opens or 8?
The
building unlocks at 8.
At 8.
8 would be the earliest.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So 8 to 10 or it closes at 5, right?
It closes
so
at 5.
Or 3 to 5. That would be my preference too. One of those two.
I'm more frequently in court in the mornings than in the afternoons, but the time that we meet now I know is not convenient for a lot of folks, but it's the time that I'm more likely than not to be available just because courts are rarely in court at 7 o'clock at night. Things are not going well if I'm in court at 7 o'clock at night. I would choose afternoon.
At the last meeting, there was sort of a consensus that keeping it on this night, in this space, at this time, if not even a little earlier, would be most feasible for everybody. But
we
were instructed thereafter that
the
promises made were not intended to.
And there were some discussions about it.
I know what you're talking about there. It is not it's not the most convenient. This location I think is extremely convenient for most of us, and I think it's probably easier for the public to come and address us. But to maximize the convenience of the Central Santa Ana location, I would think later in the day, just because as often as I go to court, I know what the parking looks like in the morning, and it's very difficult, whereas later in the day, spaces tend to free up.
Does it make sense for your schedule to meet in the middle of the day at lunchtime? If you have court in the morning and the afternoon?
No, it would probably keep me from gaining weight, so that'd be useful.
Becky, as a county employee, are you able to come anytime during the day?
No, I can't.
So you would be effectively decommissionized?
Yep.
You could come during the day at all?
No, I can't.
Not during the
can you can you explain why just at a
but I'm employee I have to put 40 hours
of
week
of the county
I'm not a county employee
OCTA.
But they wouldn't allow you two hours a month to take off 2 hours a month on Monday.
I don't know, I have to ask, but it is unlikely because there's nothing related to my business, so it is outside OCTA's business, so I'm not sure what they're going to say.
I can meet during the daytime because my schedule is flexible. I have some standing board meetings like I have tonight on other organizations, but I can arrange my therapy schedule, which is usually at night. So I usually see patients at night because they work during the day. So it actually works better for me during the day. So we've got a mixed bag here.
Mm-hmm. Becky, you're a chief. Do you want to comment?
I'm fine with either one.
I could probably make anything work. I'll go with whatever the consensus is, but my vote would be morning.
I think my vote would be morning too, like 10 to 12.
I would probably be more like Michael. My customers are kind of nationwide and probably the majority on the East Coast, but afternoon 3 to 5, my business winds down quite a bit.
My hangover doesn't wear off till 3.
You know,
I knew you were going to say something.
One more thing I'll suggest is maybe we do kind of split the difference in the idea about the lunch hour, because the benefit I think of it being right in the middle of the day at the lunch hour and being familiar with the court as well, people leave, they drive off and they go off to lunch, and so if we're arriving at the lunch hour, there's going to be more parking, I would think. And
I thought
also, if you're traveling there and back to wherever you came from in the middle of the day, you're not going to have any traffic.
That's right. At 5 o'clock, you're going to hit all the traffic.
You could actually pack a lunch during the meeting, too. I mean, because I couldn't do this for 2 hours and do a lunch hour. Right? That would ruin the whole day.
And if I'm in court locally, I
can. So 11 to 1, is that a possibility?
Well, I believe the clerk of the board last month shared that we are unable to eat in that room. There's no food allowed.
Is 11 to 1 a possibility?
I didn't look at that time, but it probably is because people are at lunch and they usually don't schedule meetings during that time.
What if we brought food for you?
Sorry.
So I think we need to take a vote of whether people want to meet during the day, and then I don't know how it's worded, how it gets decided when the time is. Is that the chair's decision, or that's the
commission? Can I just ask for a point of clarification? And I think I already know the answer to this, but just to confirm, is it not possible to choose a time that works for the Cal? I mean, are we foreclosed from? I mean, there's no option of choosing 7 o'clock.
Well,
not,
we went
not right now.
We
it
went.
In the future.
All right.
We went both back to the supervisors with whom you and I and Carrie and Kirina met, even though it was promised to us that this would not be a problem to meet in the evening at a different county locations. The word came back to us that has been rescinded and that we are to follow the bylaws as stated. That's almost a direct quote. So it's unfortunate because I thought that we sort of had reached a consensus there, but apparently not. So I think then we need a motion, if somebody would like to make, of meeting on Thursdays.
So it's the second Thursday of the
month
from 8 to 10.
11 to 1, I think.
11
morning.
Morning.
Well, that's not what it was booked for. It was
available.
It was booked
was
for
it,
the morning.
Was it 10 to 12 or... Because I thought I heard Carrie
say
10 to 12.
We could do Wednesday, 10 to 12 in the morning.
Well, the consensus...
So
I'm,
if you look at... I'm sorry.
It's okay.
But if you look at this every other Monday, the room is available all day, so the afternoon would work. And then the first Friday of each month is also available all day, which means that we could work with that window from 10 to noon.
We did talk about Friday being a very bad day for most people. A lot of people are even out of town Friday.
Yeah.
How does Monday work for everybody?
I can't do Monday mornings.
I can't do Monday mornings either. I have to stand.
Okay. So, before we get to the motion, second Thursday, sounds like there's some consensus about that. What would be the best time? We have early morning, and then we were talking about lunchtime, even though you can't eat there, but the chief sort of made an argument that it's easier to get there and to leave, and you're really missing an hour because of travel time and everything, and if you can't have lunch hour.
I think
agree.
Second Thursday, mid to late afternoon.
You'd rather do 3 to 5.
Yeah, I'd rather do 3 to 5.
3 to 5 would be the third Thursday of the month.
Third Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Clark, that is a hard shut at 5 o'clock, right? No overtime.
No overtime.
The building does lock at 5. I mean, this is a county group. We probably would be okay if we ran over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because this is a county group. We would probably be okay.
Yeah,
be
and we'd be there staffing. So,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
you can always get out. But if somebody had to go... If somebody had to go out of the building and come back in, you know,
we would have this... Somebody would stand at the door and let you back in.
We'd
back. Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the 5 o'clock is an issue for traffic. I mean, that is
yeah,
just about
the
worst
time
to get out
of.
Yeah,
we're
going to
be in a
same.
Parking lot. Everybody is trying
yep.
to get out. That's the bad part of that.
Yeah.
I would go along with Chief Hamill with the 11 to 1 to try that. It doesn't mean we can't change it if it doesn't work out for people. That would be the second Thursday.
So just so we're clear, that time has not been scheduled or the room has
oh,
not been reserved.
Right, that's right.
So the clerk will still have to go back
okay.
and make sure that that room is available at that time.
8 to 10 is available.
11 to 1 is not bad.
So 8 to 10 is available
mm-hmm.
on the second
Thursday
of the month.
Well, should we have that as our default?
How about 10 to 12?
That's what we're saying. That room was not reserved for that slot.
But it says
10 to 12. 10 to 12.
Oh, I'm not sure.
But that's morning, right?
Right, but when we locked it in, we just did morning 8 to 10.
Oh.
We didn't
oh.
go into the afternoon
oh.
a little
oh,
bit.
Geez,
but
that's not really
it,
early.
So
that's early morning.
It could be available. I don't, unfortunately, even with my county phone, I don't have access to
so
the
maybe the motion should be that we meet the second Thursday of each month
first choice if it's available from 11 to 1, and second choice from 8 to 10.
You know, I just realized I have a standing morning meeting on the second Thursday of each month. I won't be able to come at all if it's in the morning.
Even if it's 11 to 1?
If it's 11 to 1, I have a kind of.
But 8 to 10 doesn't work for you.
I know.
So
I have a standing meeting 7 to 9.
So then perhaps the motion should read the following. The second Thursday of each month, first choice 11 to 1, and second choice the third Thursday of each month, 3 to 5.
I'll second that motion.
Well, I can't make a motion.
So moved.
So moved. Is there a seconder to the motion?
Second.
Okay.
So seconded by Dr. Reynolds. Is there any discussion on the motion?
Yes.
It's a great motion.
I just want to confirm that we're talking about the second Thursday of each month, from 11 to 1, or the third Thursday of each month in the afternoon, 3 to 5.
That's what I heard.
Okay.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay, so the motion passes.
Abstain.
Abstain. Becky Lang? Thank you. Abstention, sorry. My bad.
Can you
take lunch?
Well, that's
yeah,
I can.
So even if
you
just
yes.
One would work for you,
wouldn't
it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you all very much for that conversation. Okay. And you can confirm tomorrow with
yes,
us, and
tomorrow.
We'll just send out an email.
Yes, perfect.
That would be great.
I will
thank you, sir.
Email Norma first thing in the morning when I get in at 7.
Right. So is number 4 still active? Is it still active? Is it still relevant? What are you judges?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, item number 4, appoint commissioners to awards judging committee.
Okay, so what is the judging committee? In our contract, correct me if I'm wrong, Norma, in our contract, part of our responsibility to fulfill our contract with the county is to participate in the OC Human Relations Council dinner, along with commission being, I don't know if it's a co-sponsor, but certainly participating in the work of that program, specifically around awards. And what are these awards? These are awards to recognize people who have stood up against hate and violence and are really role models in so many different ways, whether they've been the victim or the stand-upper or the police officer. There's lots of different ways to look at it. And for those who have been to this dinner, it is completely inspiring to hear they make a video and you see it, and Irvine Police has been recognized, Garden Grove, I think, last year was recognized, and it's specific to an officer, something that they have done, as well as many people throughout the county. And what this item is asking is that we appoint somebody from this commission to sit on that committee and help judge those awards. Did I get it?
Yes, you did.
All right. Is there a motion as such? So moved by our friend Becky. Is there a seconder to the motion?
And I'm sorry, the motion is that the commission appoint a commissioner.
Correct.
I'll second the motion.
Is there any discussion to that? Who has the right to appoint that person?
Yeah.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Any abstentions? The motion passes unanimously. If you're interested, would you please let me know in sitting on that committee? It's really cool. I mean, you get to really read great bios and great tips. Becky, anybody else interested? Becky, okay, so we'll have a little discussion and we'll figure out how to make that happen. Okay.
Next item is item number 5, review and discuss Strawman Commission Strategic Priorities document.
So, I don't even know how to start this. We had a 3.5-hour meeting last month based off of a 4-hour meeting prior to that in which we were discussing strategic plan. For those of you who were not able to make either of them, or particularly last month, in which we really went piece by piece, word for word, it would be my preference that that we answer any questions that you might have, but not repeat the 4-hour nature of the meeting in which we really
so
discussed
much.
This. Yes. I mean, I'm glad you're all here, but we've really worked on this very, very hard, and unless there are pressing issues, because I'm sure you've had a chance to review it, I would like to entertain those issues and discussions, and certainly get this voted on tonight. So before I do sort of a short review, let me see if I can answer any questions for people who may not have had a chance to think about this or be present at the conversations.
Could we have our clerk read the transcript of that meeting?
You can listen to it.
Send you a copy.
Yeah. All right, let me do a short review. I think that, please, anybody who was present at both particularly, correct me if I misspeak. Basically, we tried to put all of our ideas on one piece of paper. And I think we did a really good job. I'd like the minutes to reflect another thank you to Dr. John Becknell, who really walked us through this so brilliantly. The commission, for lack of a better way to describe it, has been in transition for quite some time now. And finally, we have a document that I think is really directive in a lot of ways. And I'll begin with sort of the what Chief said at our first strategic meeting. He made the argument passionately and eloquently that this body has great symbolic power and the ability to stand for things that are right and represent the county in really positive ways. And that these meetings are quite essential for that symbolism to be strong. So that's why I'm thrilled we have a quorum tonight. And this meeting is the central part of what the commission does, in addition to helping, supervising, and working with the staff and their work. So starting on the left side, how do we make OC safe, tolerant, and bias-free with respect to how the commission functions? One is to be a listening group, to really hear what's going on, and that's why I committed to you to bring speakers every month that will elucidate different ideas and thoughts for us. Education and prevention. This is really in the realm of our staff working on the commission's behalf to go out and educate and prevent. Intervention. This is some of what I'm doing as the a commissioner, and certainly what our staff is doing as well. Relationship building. This is all of our jobs here in so many ways, from the homelessness stuff that Bekele is doing to any of the other representations you're making. Report and publicizing. A key piece of our identity is the hate crime report. As Brett so mentioned today, another group wants to understand how we go about that and understand that so that they can emulate it. Recognizing and honoring. This is something in process. So we just voted for the awards. And we may have a monthly or maybe a quarterly, just depends on what Carrie comes up with, of recognizing good works, good role models in our county for people who are tolerant, kind, thoughtful, who do good. If you're a human relations commission, it is important to put that spotlight on hate and at the same time put that spotlight on good. And to do one without the other may, I don't know if imbalance is the right word, but makes us fuller to see both. So,
and that is growing legs.
Yeah, great. Great. Awesome. Collaborations. I mean, that is with our vendor right now. I mean, it would be wrong for me not to recognize the long-standing relationship with OC Human Relations Council, who, while we are separating in many ways, in a lot of these collaborations, and the work that a lot of Brett was referring to, is certainly because of that relationship. We'll see maybe a report on the RFP process and all that kind of stuff where we are later on, but those collaborations can change, mutate, and develop in other ways as well. We also have collaborations, don't forget, with dozens of other organizations, the Council on American Islamic Relations, the Gay Center of Orange County, the Anti-Defamation League, the Sheriff's Department, each police department, the cities. I mean, every organization you can think of OC Human Relations is connected to. Turning to the strategic priorities in the next year is to build internal clarity about the commission. And this really is worth everybody taking time to read and understand What is our history and what are we empowered to do? What are the projects of the commission? And you're going to see, as you did last month and every month hereafter, a real strong review of what we're doing according to the contract that we have. Build clarity about how commissioners are appointed. That's why I asked you to announce how you were appointed. Ensure new commissioners are appropriately prepared for the role. Norma's going to roll out something today to show you how we make sure people are brought on board properly. And this is a beginning process. It's not the end of the process. And we really need to understand deeply, besides just the chair, how our staff works and what they're doing. That's why I ask that you present on a snippet of what you do in implicit bias training. Strengthen our collaboration with the Board of Supervisors. I think we're doing this well, but there's a lot of room for growth too there, and I think we're on the right road there. Elevate the Commission's visibility. That is certainly something in process, but that certainly needs more work. And maximize Commission meeting to fulfill mission, and that's something I'm certainly committed to doing during the 2 hours that we spend a month together. And then what's needed for our success is trust with our community, and then also internally. We need to really have that trust. Positive public regard for the commission. I hope that exists, and if not, we need to work on that. And the rest are a little bit repetitive, but certainly the last one, productive meetings. I think for a good bit of time, for those of us who've been here a while, we walked out of each meeting feeling not as good as when we walked in. I hope, given this strategic plan and our collaboration together, that we'll always feel better walking out than when we walked in, that we've done something good, that our 2 hours weren't a rubber stamp for something, but that was good, thoughtful discussion, and we walk away better educated. I will stop now and open it up for questions, but I just wanted to give that review for the record and for those who have not been able to attend for whatever reasons, and see if we can vote on this. Questions, comments?
Who prepared the outline?
This was the work of our first four-hour meeting, and I put it together along with the vice chair, with the executive directorate, and Dr. John Becknell. And then we came back for the next four-hour meeting in which we talked about this, and this is the reflection of those tweaks as well.
My comment is that it seems very well done, and I wanted to compliment whoever put it together.
Thank you so much. Well, all of us, that's all to all of our credit. This, a lot was reflected in here. Any other conversation?
I like it.
Amen. I think she's a yes vote.
Yes.
All right, then. If there's no other comments, all those in favor of our strategic plan, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
Do we have a motion?
I think we took a motion.
Yes.
Oh, I missed it. I apologize.
Maybe we didn't.
Well, I'm sure we did.
I made a motion to accept this plan as is.
Second.
Okay. Sorry, I thought we did. Discussion? No, seeing no discussion, except for my lengthy speech. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Any abstentions? The strategic plan passes unanimously. Mazel tov. Congratulations. That's a big deal, guys. That's a really big deal. A really big deal. Thank you all very much. Yeah. And this is a nice thing for us to report back also to the Board of Supervisors who are interested in our work and want to know our direction. So that's something you and I should take up with the chair and the vice chair of the Board of Supervisors.
Okay, item number 7, Executive Director's Report, new commissioner orientation documents, review quarterly commission report, and hate crime network meeting.
All right, well, first off, congratulations on the strategic plan. I know that it was a long time coming, it was a lot of hard work, but I really appreciate the time that each of you committed to this through the phone interviews, through the surveys, and our meetings. I feel it's going to be a really good guide for us in how we pave our path as a commission and determine the work and what is it that we want the community to know about us and see us and how we serve them. So thank you for all that great work. Last month, as we were reviewing this, there was a discussion on getting to familiarize with what is it that new commissioners receive and type of orientation and documentation they receive when they come on board. So I didn't make all the copies because it's a lot of paper, What I did do is I did create a checklist of sorts that gives you an overview of the documents that a new commissioner receives. So if you look at that list, I didn't even keep a copy for myself. So usually it's a packet, and in that packet I'll provide the job description of the commissioner, quickly review that and some of the responsibilities as a commissioner. The other one is the commission meeting guidelines. There's a one pager where it states some of the protocols on attendance, also the interaction among each other, etc. Then there's the really quick one page, half page summary of the Brown Act. The commission bylaws are always also provided in there and highlighted some of the important areas of the voting, the location, etc. And then there is a 15 page supplemental reading that I provide to about the historical background of the commission that was written by Dennis Downey, who did his thesis on the OC Human Relations Commission. So it's a really great, it really gives you a good overview of some of the work and some of the issues. What?
These things? Could you
email? Oh, yes, yeah, definitely. I have special folders, so I can email those. So this is quite a packet, and I do have one copy here just because I wanted to share what that packet looks like. What is it?
That looks pretty good.
This is it.
It's like more than 15 pages.
Yeah. No, not that. So this is usually the amount of paper that someone, the new commissioner, receives. So last month there was a discussion of, is there a one quick pager that gives us a sense of give us more information about our mission, how commissioners are appointed, maybe a quick timeline of some of the major accomplishments of the commission. Really also the outline of the activities that the commission's responsible for through the contract with the county. And then there was also a discussion of having even just a quick chart to give you a sense of where does the council fall in, where does the board of supervisors, etc. So with that in mind, I created this document. It's a draft. There's items here that still need to be vetted and checked, but this was just something that I thought would be helpful, and I wanted to bring it here so we can discuss if this is the information that you're looking for. Yes. There you go. So if you look at the front page, at the top it gives you a quick overview of our mission, the appointment authority, the role of the commission, the commissioner responsibilities, and the information of where the meetings take place, when and where. In the middle of the page, there's this graphic of more of like a timeline that gives a little historical framework of when the commission was established, some of the major things that the commission did, so publishing the Equal Opportunity, Employment Opportunity Handbook, when the Bridges Program was established, when the PCRP, Police Community Reconciliation Program, was established, ending with the council now having a contract to staff the commission. At the bottom of the page is the matrix of the 2017-18 activities that are through that contract that we have with the county. So it's a list of all the activities that we're responsible as staff and commission that we need to meet at the end of the year. On the flip side is a little graphic to help us understand where we fall. So it has the box of the Board of Supervisors and OC Cities, which are the appointing authorities for this commission, the contract to be able to provide administrative support to the commission comes from Orange County Community Resources, and they contract with OC Human Relations Council. And I didn't And the only other person I put under was the chief executive officer, since they're the ones who sign off on the contract and are the contact. So under community resources, we go straight to the commission. They oversee that contract, and then that their communication mostly is with me in terms of reporting and anything else that needs to, we need to make sure that we're up to par in that contract. And then I have two staff members who serve also as support.
How come the council has a bigger box than the commission? I don't think that's fair.
we can make it smaller if you want.
We definitely can do that.
We can change it.
And in larger font.
Okay, all right.
It's actually very hard to diagram, and it's a complicated situation. If you think about it, Norma and her staff really have three bosses. They have the council that holds the contract. They have this commission. And then the Board of Supervisors in the new bylaws also has the right to hire and fire the executive director of the commission. So it's a rather complicated graph, if you will, and I don't know that this totally captures it, so that's why I wanted to point it out. So we're trying to meet several needs here and hopefully doing it well, but it's important to note the organizational chart is complicated beyond what we see here on this paper.
So I wanted to bring this here because I know that we said, is there a one pager where we capture the information that's
well, you've
captured something?
A lot in that one
so
page, yeah.
I was wondering is, if this really reflects what that discussion was about, if there's any tweaks or any other information that you'd like to see, we could have that discussion now and make sure that I make notes so I'm able to do that. And then moving forward, as new commissioners come on board, this is our review piece, of course, with the bylaws and anything else I'd like to see.
This is the quick read.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's good.
You did a great job, Norma.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
One question.
I don't see anything else you could add, honestly.
I actually... Oh,
hold on.
Yeah.
Well, I was just wondering, I'm not sure it really portrays what our relationship is with that council. Sometimes that's a question that comes up that I hear is, all right, wait a minute, there's the Human Relations Council and there's the commission. Who does what? Who's in charge? What's the relationship there? On the chart, it appears that we don't answer to them, that we only answer to the human resource contract administrator who kind of governs both of us. But we know that we do work quite a bit with the council. I don't know if we want to put something in there, some sort of a blurb, and how it seems to be a pretty integral part of what we do is how we work with that council.
There's a faint line.
Oh, yeah.
The chief executive officer connected to me.
Oh, there is? Oh.
It's very faint.
Okay.
I can make that.
Is it a dotted line?
Yes, it was a dotted
did?
Line.
Oh, that'd be
so when you look at this in color, it looks better.
A little bit darker, yeah. Okay.
But that's the connection because the council holds that contract and we're not county employees.
And that's how we work with them is through
exactly.
Your association with their executive.
And my staff.
And, there is a line, and as I look at this, it appears that the OC Board of Supervisors and OC Cities appoints the OC Community Resources Contract Administrator, who then appoints the Orange County Human Relations Commission. And I know that's not exactly how things work. It would seem like maybe a more accurate way to draw it would be to have a line that goes directly from the OC Board of Supervisors and OC Cities down to the Orange County Human Relations Commission so that it doesn't, you know, and then you would erase that line between the OC Community Resources Contract Administrator and the OC Human Relations Commission.
Oh. Isn't the human resources for the Orange County Community Resources who manage and we report to, and they report to the board?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so are these lines designed to show who reports to whom, or are they designed to show who appoints whom?
Well,
it's
the
relationship.
Board of Supervisors can't continually overlook us and oversee us, so they have a community resources that does, and they report to them as well, is my understanding.
So the authority of appointment is with the Board of Supervisors and the City Selection Committee.
Maybe you could put that in the box, maybe in our box.
The contract
appointed by
with for the services are directly under OC Community Resources. So anything along the reporting, which actually I just sent a quarterly report today,
mm-hmm.
around our activities for the last two quarters, it doesn't go to the Board of Supervisors. It goes to OCCR.
But shouldn't, okay. But Michael's point is a good point too.
No.
Shouldn't that report go to OC Human Relations Council and the council respond to Human Resources, since they're the ones really in relationship?
They have a contract.
Yeah.
I mean, why are you having any contact with... I'm just thinking aloud, and maybe I shouldn't. But why do you have any relationship with OC Community Resources? If they have an issue, they should be talking with the people who hold the contract.
That's right. I agree with that. And the commissioners really are responsible to the Board of Supervisors.
Yeah, not the...
Yeah.
We are not responsible to the Community Resources people.
Okay. Now, in terms of the communication with OCCR, anything and everything that's in the contract affects this commission. And if I'm not part of that communication, then I'm out of the loop in terms of what is expected in terms of the in terms of that contract.
That may be the practical, and I totally agree with you, but that's something we should talk about. Chief, you wanted to say?
Yeah, just the point that was made earlier, I know we've talked about this before, is, you know, the role of the nonprofit versus the role of the commission. And as we all try to, you know, better delineate, define roles, you know, one thing I might suggest, and seeing this org chart is making me think about it, if we're trying to create different kinds of pictorial representations of to help us new commissioners, the public, understand the responsibilities of the nonprofit and the commission, you know, like, so we could do a matrix where you have, you know, one column that has whatever you want to call it, responsibility, task, activity, and then you have a second or third columns that are the nonprofit and the commission, and then you have check boxes that indicate who's responsible for what. And there could be some items, especially items that are more sort of symbolic, where maybe there's check boxes in both, right? Because there is still some overlap in the mission of both organizations. Just an idea if we're going to try to create, you know, some kind of documentation that is intended to visually help us, something like this, a matrix like this, might be interesting.
So would then that, if we look at what's in our monthly summary, it's a matrix. So should we be adding a column? I'm just thinking, can I pass this around? So this is the quarterly report that was sent out to OCCR today. And
can I interrupt you for a second? I apologize that I have to leave early. I told you about that earlier.
Yes.
Is there anything else we need to vote on?
No.
Okay.
No.
Good. I thought.
I was going to have the same question. So I gotta hit the road to Nevada soon.
Tonight.
Yeah.
I have to pick up somebody in a wheelchair. I better not keep them waiting.
Why are you in a wheelchair?
And
so,
and that's heavy.
So let me just, before you leave, Carrie, we have consensus on this page.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's this page that needs some work.
Matrix.
Well, I thought, I had wondered if there might, I don't know, maybe not, but I was just wondering if there could be something that talks about our relationship with what we do with the commission on this page, but, you know, other than
the council, you mean?
With the council, that says that we're working, you know, how we're working. To answer that question, maybe in writing, and then show it on the...
Okay.
But is that too much? Is that going into too much detail?
No, but the less we say about... that's not the way I want to say it. We're making every effort to show a distinction between the council's work and the commission's work.
Uh-huh.
So to state it on the one page that we work collaboratively together in all these areas defeats the purpose of showing just what the commission does.
Sure.
However... Your point is a good point. We should detail those areas, and I think we have it on the matrix. Is it on this matrix or another matrix? On the areas in which we work in collaboration with. Is it here?
I think so, yeah.
It's on one chart we have where we share all that
Maybe it would be enough. Maybe it would be enough just to show it in a diagram on the other side of the page. That might be sufficient.
Here,
we clearly.
Letter M.
In collaboration with this
Bridges program.
And N also, N as well.
So
and the next one too.
So would it be helpful back to kind of what Chief was offering?
Mm-hmm.
Because some of these say in collaboration with council, and a lot of them are in collaboration. Would it?
If that's all, I mean, if that's really all we do with them is the Bridges and restorative justice, what's written here, then we don't need to put anything else in there, except for maybe what Chief was talking about, maybe a diagram that shows what they do separate from us, what we do separate from them, and what we do together. It's like three. You can almost do a Venn diagram that way, you know, the two circles that overlap. What they do together, what they do by themselves, what we do by ourselves.
So that, if I could, let us take another crack at the second page, the back page, because
okay.
I want to be clear, and we want to get that OCCR question answered. I mean, that's a really important issue that you're quite right. Your communication has to be very much in connection with OCCR, but there isn't really a line. I mean, the OCCR goes to the nonprofit. So that's something for us to think about.
Yeah.
Okay. That's helpful. We'll go back to the drawing.
I like that you work on this because that's what we really do. It's great to have a single sheet like this. Yeah. For most people won't read that whole packet, you know, but they'll look at this and read it. So that's great.
And the org chart, I think, is a great idea. It just needs to be redrawn.
I would also just call your attention to the quarterly report that Norma passed out. Look at how many things on the right-hand side of which she and our staff are the lead. It's pretty impressive. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 11 things in a month. No more than 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 things in a month of which we are the lead. Anything else, Norma?
The only other thing is there was a flyer in the packet, but it's been updated. There is a hate crime network meeting next week. Don, would you like to share a little bit about?
Sure. Okay. Our first hate crime network meeting was back in September when we launched our hate crime report. Right? So with that, we wanted to invite all the people who attended, especially the agency that we collaborated with in collecting our VCON data. We invited them back for a second meeting, which will be next Tuesday. I hope some of the commissioners could join them and listening into what is the next step for us to work together as a network of combat with
Wonderful.
So please come. If you can be here, it's going to be a good group of allies, people that we work really closely with in creating and putting together our hate crime report. So the presence of commissioners is always important and appreciated. So if you can come, please make some time.
And also please let me know if you can, if you are going to be attending. We will be at the office off of Edinger, 1801 East Edinger.
It's on the
flyer.
That's all I have.
Thank you so much.
Okay, item number 8, update from OC Chiefs and Sheriff.
So I was gone on vacation at the last Chiefs meeting. I don't have an update, but if anyone has any questions about anything about Orange County Chiefs, I'd be more than happy to try to answer them.
Okay, item number 9 is OCSD Interfaith Council update.
I can't remember when the last meeting was, if it was before or after our last commission.
It was in November, that was the last one.
I had reported on it already? Oh. Our last meeting was at the Mormon Church on Benita Canyon, and it was well attended and quite interesting, and we have an upcoming executive committee meeting in which we will discuss the agenda for the next year.
Okay, commissioner questions?
Thoughts, questions, announcements? Anybody?
I do want to put a date on your calendar just as a point of personal privilege. Our temple's grand opening is June 1st. You know, we've been in a construction project for 18 months, and it would be an honor to have any and all commissioners and clerks, if they so desire, to join me for that personal celebration. Excellent, Chief. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. It's gonna be. It's a whole weekend. You can come the second too, but the first is like the consecration of the place. So.
What is the time?
7:30.
7:30 p.m.
On the first. So.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay. I get the next one we have is agenda building.
Agenda building. Any suggestions for upcoming meetings?
So, just as a note, staff and I will do a mini presentation on the training or the anticipated training we do for the Sheriff's Department. So I put that on my calendar.
That would be great. Let me also, I've just taken it upon myself to invite speakers, but certainly open to suggestions, thoughts. I mean, what was the organization she mentioned?
Life After Hate.
It might be interesting to have a former white supremacist come talk to us and for us to get in their mindset, but it doesn't just have to be about hate. It can be about any number of issues of which we address. We addressed race last month, and so there's a lot for us to look at. And so
also,
feel
now
free.
That we've set a time and date, I will be able to go back to Susan Price about having her come in and do a presentation on homelessness.
Homelessness, excellent. Don, and then Chief.
Just a thought that maybe after the selection of the awardee, maybe invite one or two of who are the awardees.
Great idea.
Share who they are, what to do, and why you honor them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful idea.
That's a very good idea.
Chief.
I'd like to maybe offer up to bring some members of my youth services team that work in the schools and have them share maybe 15 minutes some of the great programs that they have developed and have implemented in the city of Irvine.
We'd love to do that. So we have about 4 or 5 months of speakers now. Excellent.
Yes.
Well, that's terrific. Thank you. We will be in touch with all of these different populations and get you on the agenda ASAP. So thank you all.
This is German.
All right. I do want to take the time to thank our clerks who stay after hours the last 2 months here with us, 3 months. So thank you very much. All right. So
can
adjourned.
I say that I'm leaving this meeting feeling better than when I
came? Yay! That's good.